All right, 11:36. Let's welcome in Husker Super Bowl champion Scott Chanley. Good morning. Have you ever heard of or played in a game that there was joint possession or disconcerting signals that were called for a penalty or a moment in the game?
Yes, I have played in a game and I have seen it before. It's not a very common thing. I don't remember the verbiage or the language being used as that, but yes, I have seen it before.
So let's go back to the clapping part, because you know what I'm talking about in the Nebraska-Michigan game. If I'm in a loud environment and I'm on defense, and let's say we're both playing linebacker, and I need, and this is an example of Luke Reimer trying to get Chris Kolarvik's attention. He can't holler at him because he's not going to be able to hear him because the crowd is so loud. So he gets his attention with a clap, and he looks at him, and then they can position either the guys in front or each other. How are you supposed to communicate in an environment like that if you're playing linebacker like Nebraska was?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate because as a referee, you don't know what they're trying to do, and everybody, it seems like, goes on the clap now for a cadence, unlike, you know, even 10, 15 years ago, there were, clap cadence wasn't a big deal. And so that's how you did things as linebackers, to get people's attention. And I think if they're going to start making that call and it becomes a common thing, as a coach, you just have to tell your guys, you have to physically go up. Whether you're trying to get the attention of a defensive lineman or a defensive end, you got to go up and you got to tap them on a side and relay the message, you know, physically, because you can't put it into the official's hands on some of these calls. But it's one of those things where if you're an official, you call it every time or don't call it at all, because you can't pick and choose times in the game when you want to do it.
Would you rather be on defense or offense when it comes to trying to draw the other team offside?
I think I'd rather be on defense.
Really? You could have because you played with a quarterback that, and we know what now they do, where they change their voice or a hard count. Where you're trying to get guys to jump offside. What are you trying to do on defense to get those linemen in front of you to move? Just a little flinch?
I think it's easier defensively because at home, when you have a crowd, when you have a crowd getting into it and they're wild, and you can do different things on defense by stemming, sliding the defensive line, at the last minute making different adjustments that make left tackles and right tackles and tight ends and people who are scared of speed rushers, mm-hmm. You can make them points just by making those last-minute moves on defense.
Scott Chanley joining us here on the Gary Sharp Show. Your thoughts on Michigan-Nebraska, what you saw?
This Nebraska team, I mean, they're competitive. And I know the record isn't where everybody wants it to be. And when you become a competitive team, now you can start to point to a play here or a play there and being undefeated or having one loss. And you know, it's crazy to me because over the summer, everybody was throwing stones at Nebraska for trying to get out of the Oklahoma game. Whether or not that was true or they actually tried to do it, I don't know. But it could be said, when it's all said and done, that Oklahoma game could end up being the game that turned the corner for Scott Frost and his program, because these kids went to Norman, Oklahoma. Everybody picked them to get blown out. And they went down there and probably should have beat Oklahoma in a tough environment. And this team has been different ever since then. They went to Michigan State, should have won that game, but they played a really good team. And since that Oklahoma week, this team looks like they can play with anybody on the field, and they believe that they can beat anybody. And when you believe you can beat anybody, that's more than half the battle.
That seems to be – that's a topic we've discussed this week, Scott, is we, you know, on the field, you got to get over the hump of late-game situations. But mentally, it does appear whether guys, the way they carry themselves during the course of a game – or what they say, their body language on the sidelines, I think they believe now they can win those games. Not, we might win, or uh-oh, it's, we can win these games. And that's, I mean, you know that, how much of a jump that is, what that does for you in your all-around presentation when you've got that mentality.
Yeah, and you said it perfectly. The body language part of this team has drastically changed. The body language comes from your belief in yourself, belief in your teammates, belief in your coaches, what they're doing for you throughout the week. And you have that confidence when you go into game day. And the other thing about body language is it's easy to walk around with your shoulders back and your head high when you're up 10-0 or things are going well early in the game. But how do you react when you're down 10-0 or a bad play happens? That's been the biggest turning point to me with this Nebraska team, is when the adversity strikes in the game, this team gets stronger. They react to it. They're not afraid of the adversity. And that's why they've been able to stay in these games and compete with these good teams.
How as a player do you treat kickers? Because there are a lot of kickers that had bad weekends.
Well, kickers are not football players, and I don't care what anybody says. These guys, they until they go through tackle drills, until they go through all the things that football players go through, I can't consider them a football player. They're part of the game, and I start to get torn on how important kickers are to football, because football is a gladiator sport. It's a war of attrition. You have guys playing through broken bones. You have guys playing through all sorts of bumps and bruises, bleeding all over each other. And then you trot out a kicker who's done none of those things ever in their life to kick a field goal to win a game for those gladiators who are playing on the field. That's why I have strong feelings about kickers. Yeah. Now, I had a great kicker in New Orleans who won us the Super Bowl. So the love-hate relationship goes both ways. But they just – you don't expect a linebacker to make every tackle. You don't expect a quarterback to make every pass. You can't expect the kicker to make every kick. But their percentage of success has to be much higher than those other positions because it's one skill set.
What do you think it was like for the Colts? I mean, the Colts played a great game in Baltimore. You could feel it slipping away in the second half as Lamar Jackson got going. But then they got themselves in a situation to win the game. What's that locker room like after the game?
You feel like you stole a game, which winning in the NFL is hard to do. So it doesn't matter how pretty, how ugly. As long as you get a W, that's all that matters. But when you can come back against a pro team who, you know, at one point in the game, you're thinking it's 99% chance the Colts are going to win this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You've changed your whole season. I've been a part of seasons where we feel like we're a good team, but then we have a huge comeback on the road or at home. And then you think maybe we're a lot better than we're even giving ourselves credit for, because it's not easy to do. And you could just see the biggest difference from college football to the NFL, besides the skill, is how much momentum in college football just takes over. It just avalanches teams. You don't really see that in the NFL because usually guys are a little bit, you know, they're older, they're more mature, a little mentally stronger. But it felt like in the Ravens-Colts game that momentum felt almost like a college game. And once everything bad started happening to Colts, it just avalanched on them.
Lots of Chiefs fans in the listening audience. Can you fix the Kansas City defense?
I can't. I cannot. And unfortunately, you know, I played for Steve Spagnuolo for 1 year, and it wasn't the best experience. And if you ask a lot of guys who play for Steve, you know, there's he struggles after a certain period of time at places.
Mm-hmm.
His schemes aren't the most sound. Usually when he's had elite players, go back to the Giants when they beat the Patriots, he had dominant defensive linemen. I know the Chiefs have played well at times under him, but again, you have really good players. It's the soundness of his schemes is probably the worst I've ever played for in the NFL. And I think at some point, when you've been a coordinator for a couple of years, other coaches start to find those unsound things you're doing, and they start to expose those things.
Is his defense predicated on, one, you've got to have an elite pass rusher and go from there?
Well, yeah. And, you know, everybody will say, well, that's every defense.
Yeah.
You know, every defense, you need an elite pass rusher to do anything. But usually with Steve, and just going back to the Giants, and then even with the Chiefs, with Chris Jones, when he's playing well or playing and healthy, those guys erase those unsound things I was talking about. When I say unsound, he put in things in coverages, in zone coverages, that nobody had ever seen before. Like, this doesn't make any sense, and it's not sound. There's going to be guys open.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve, he just runs his defense, and he believes that it works because it has won Super Bowls for him. And, you know, if you don't have those elite pass rushers who can erase quarterbacks' reads before they find those holes in the zones, then you're going to have troubles.
There's the other side of that game, and the Bills are on a heater right now, and they've got a lot of things going in their direction and could possibly be hosting key games in the month of January in Buffalo. But as teams are attacking Kansas City and they're trying to figure things out, and they've got three key AFC losses on their ledger, do you think we've seen over time, you know, as Mahomes plays a little bit more and what that offense does under Andy Reid, what they rely on, people are starting to get a blueprint. But do you think on Sunday night, the Bills, who built their defense to beat Mahomes and that kind of offense, just sitting in coverage, playing a lot of cover two like they did, is the right way to approach Mahomes and not try and blitz him?
Yeah, I think that the Chiefs offense is almost like the Rams' greatest show on turf offense, where after a while, teams just start to say, we're going to play an umbrella, we're going to play cover two, we're going to keep everybody back, keep the ball in front of us, and we don't think you're going to be patient enough to run the ball and to take those little checkdowns. And I'm not so sure that that's a blueprint, because I think Kansas City eventually is going to find a way to beat that. But right now, everybody's just saying, we've got to limit the explosive plays and make Kansas City just drive the field, and so far they're not doing that.
Did you think the Saints would have this record at this point in the season?
Yeah, I did. I think breaking a new quarterback, 10 new starters offensively and defensively, I didn't expect them to beat the Packers the way they did, so I thought they would actually lose that game. They kind of won some games I didn't think they would and lost some games I thought they would end up winning. So it's about right.
What do you think is next? They're coming up on what their bye week is this week?
What was that?
The Saints' bye week is this week or next week, correct?
Yes, it's this week, yeah. They have this week off, and then they pick up with the Seahawks and then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Halloween.
Speaking of the Buccaneers, how do you slow that offense down when Tom Brady is picking apart defenses, whether they're the Dolphins or a little bit better defenses? What are you seeing in Tampa Bay that, I mean, I know you're high on them, but what are they doing offensively that has kind of elevated them to a whole nother level, and they don't have Gronkowski and they don't have some other key parts that are injured?
Tom Brady. I mean, Tom Brady has been running his offense. They started about the last year, half the season. He said, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm comfortable with. This is what I like. And I just see so much of the Patriots offense in Tampa Bay right now that he is the maestro, the offensive coordinator, the quarterback, the greatest quarterback of all time. And it's all working because of his knowledge of the game and what he's been able to do.
So let's go back. We were talking about the Colts and the emotion of that game. There's also the emotion on the sidelines of watching Lamar Jackson do what he is doing. What's your thoughts on Lamar Jackson this season as more of a pocket passer, or also being maybe a smarter runner when he pulls it down and takes off?
Yeah, I mean, he's making plays. He's making defenses pay when he runs the ball, and that's what's hard about playing against Lamar Jackson. But he's throwing the ball much better, and we all knew that he would have to do that to become an elite quarterback in the NFL. He is an elite runner. There's no doubt about it. But he is making the reads in the passing game unlike he's done at any point in his career so far, and that's what's taken his game to the next level.
Don't you think he's also become, you know, I know some people said, well, is he just going to be RG3 running with the football? And RG3, I thought, was careless and set himself up to get crushed. It appears that Lamar, and he still fumbles the football, but he values more of what it means to run and not set yourself up to get absolutely crushed and put yourself in harm's way to be injured.
I mean, it's a fine line. I think you have to figure out how to have longevity. And I think every player goes through what their strengths and weaknesses are as a player. And some guys' strengths don't lend to having longevity in the NFL. And you have to figure out within the scheme that you're doing how you can be a productive player, but also be there and be accountable, be available to your team every single week. And that's the hard thing, though. Some guys are put in position. If you're a quarterback with some legs and you have an offense coordinator that just wants to run you into the ground, the longevity isn't so much up to you as it is to the guy calling the plays. So sometimes guys deal with that as well.
One final one here, the stuff about John Gruden, but now the Raiders still have 12 games left. They're now on a two-game losing streak, and it was kind of awkward on Sunday the way they lost to the Bears. The Raiders didn't look like anything they looked like getting off to a 3-0 start. They're kind of at a crossroads. What do you think happens to the Raiders moving forward inside of that locker room and the 12 games that they have left to play?
Yeah, if I had to guess, I think their season, for all intents and purposes, is probably over. That was a team that at the start of the year, last few weeks, was probably one of the up-and-coming teams, probably was a playoff team. I just don't know how. I played in 2012 with the Saints when we didn't have Sean Payton there because of the whole Bountygate suspension. And you can tell yourself everything's going to be okay. You can tell yourself you have great leadership. But when you don't have that guy who's won a Super Bowl standing in front of you, leading everything, and that guy who's been telling you this is how we're going to win a championship, it changes. So I think the Raiders season, they have a lot to figure out. They have to figure out who's going to lead this team going forward. But I would be really shocked if they end up salvaging the season and making anything into it.
As always, Scott, I appreciate it. Enjoy the off week with the family and no television duties. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you.
That's Scott Chandley, Husker, Super Bowl champion with the Saints, works on the pre and the post game for the Saints, who are 3-2 on their bye week this weekend. Is there more for the Raiders situation? I agree with what Scott has said and others have said. This is going to be tough for the Raiders moving forward. Inside of that locker room, I mean, they're at a crossroads. Do you stick around next year? Do you put stuff on tape to say, hey, I'm out? What is next to happen in a league that has struggled to evolve? But 650,000 emails. Someone was leaking. Someone wanted Gruden out. And when he was not fired on Friday, they said, here come more emails. And the awkwardness of their game against the Bears, you could tell that there was a major distraction going on because the Bears didn't play great. Justin Fields wasn't fantastic. Just kind of everybody was just there. And the Raiders certainly were not there. But they still have 12 games to go in a season in which they started 3-0. All right, mailbag's coming up next. Still 2 more hours to go. Parker Gabriel will stop by. I'll share some of the thoughts that I have. Mitch Sherman from The Athletic wrote a great in-depth piece on the 41-day coaching search between Frank Solich and Bill Callahan, led by Steve Peterson. I almost didn't want to read it. I live that, doing sports nightly and having to do, having Peterson's show and being around that. Wow, people are going to read that story. And it, again, it's a great story. It also lets you know that Mike Sherman was kind of the quote-unquote surprise candidate. How dysfunctional that was. That at a place like Nebraska football, somebody's friggin' ego got in the way and trampled all over what could have been a solid search. Instead, went through a litany of guys that said no and maybe, hey, let me talk to Nebraska and I'll get a raise to Nebraska getting their fifth choice. But there's a lot more in there that is still kind of the case nowadays at Nebraska when it's come to hiring a football coach. Plus, we will discuss the current athletic director, his impact in his first 3 months on the job when it comes to football. I think it's pretty evident that there's a better relationship between the head football coach and who's in the power chair. And I think that started right away. That didn't wait until some adversity hit during the season. I think that happened maybe almost immediately after Trev held his press conference in Lincoln. All right, 2 more hours to go on a Wednesday of the Gary Sharp Show with Josh. Mailbag is coming up next on 1620 The Zone.